Hello everyone, my name is Oluwaseun Olusegun, and I'm delighted to be hosting this special episode of Kolabari Work Series. Now, if you have no idea, it is a podcast that is focused on exploring the different aspect as well as the interesting world of work. And then on this particular episode, we'll be looking at fuel subsidy removal and the Nigerian worker. So chances are that if you're a Nigerian, you are not oblivious to this. And even if you're living under a rock, you would have been aware of fuel subsidy removal. Now, at the end of this episode, some of the things that you can be assured you'll be getting from it is you will understand better what subsidy is and the implication of the removal, as well as understanding the source, how subsidy came about. Also, as a result of the practical insights that will be shared from this podcast, you will be getting insight and tips on how to navigate the subsidy removal, the rising cost of transportation that will actually spiral over to other things, and some other behavioral changes that you can make in your attitude, some decision making that is related to the removal of fuel subsidy. So come along with us as we discuss that in this episode of the Kolabari Work series. Now, to do justice to this topic, I have two guests. Of course, you're very familiar with one of them. But before I introduce him, I will get started with one you might not know before now. And he will be talking about the fuel subsidy removal. And that is an oil and gas industry executive with over 20 years' experience in sales, marketing, business development, trading, business operations and development, as well as people management and also supply chain across West Africa. Now, he's the country pilot manager for Trade Grid. He is the COO for Iona Nigeria, as well as the principal consultant for Cotevis. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jide Pratt, popularly known as JP. Thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thank you, Sean. I was beginning to wonder if that was me being introduced. Thank you very much. And thanks, Aziz, for this opportunity as well.
I was wondering as well if that is that I know.
Thank you very much. And of course, you already know him from previous episodes of Kolabari Work Series. And that's to tell you that if you have not been listening, you should go back. There are two seasons and many episodes to educate you on different aspects of your work and productivity and creativity as well. So that is the brain, the muscle, and well, maybe the nerves and sinews behind Kolabari. He's an HR consultant, and that is Aziz Omosun.
Thank you very much, Sheo. I think for me, this episode is very interesting. So let me just briefly state how this came about. Right now, globally, I think the number one topic on everybody's mind is AI, artificial intelligence. If you follow what's happening in the news, AI seems to be the number one trend. Until the new administration announced the removal of fuel subsidy. And in Nigeria, that became the number one topic on everybody's lips. That's what everybody was talking about. So I was thinking to myself and I said, since since the subsidy removal affects a lot of people, and we have a podcast that focuses on the Nigerian worker, on the workplace itself. Why don't we do an episode that will kind of provide information in one regard about subsidy itself, but two, how to manage with the removal of fuel subsidy. So I called up Julian and I asked him if he would be interested, and he said that he was, and we decided to do this episode. So Sean, over to you.
Thank you very much. I am itching and excited to jump into it now. So let's get to the starting point, really, and that is subsidy. Now, for there to be a removal, there has to be the creation of subsidy. But before we even go to the removal, let's understand or let's help the average Nigerian who has no idea of what subsidy is. What exactly is subsidy, Jide?
Okay, thanks again for having me. There's a Latin word called subsidium. And you know, some aspects of English came from, let me say, Latin and Greek. Now, subsidy is a word that means a grant. or let me say a palliative, or let me say a discount. So it means that if you wanted to buy a bag of rice, and the farmer that harvests that rice, sacks it, and takes it to the market, dots this at 100 naira. It would mean that ideally in the marketplace, you should buy it at 100 naira plus his margin. Let's say his margin is 20 naira. So it means that you should buy it at 120 naira. That said, the government that runs where you are, or the local government or the council, whatever it is, the form of government or the arm of government says that, look, we think that the populace or the people of this area should buy this at 85 naira. So you know what will happen? We would subsidize, we would reduce, we would grant, we'll give a palliative of the difference between the 120 naira and the 85 naira. So it means that the people will go to the market, myself, Aziz, Shen, will go to the market and would pay 85 naira. But don't forget, we've said that everything would cost 120 naira. So what it means is that there's a 35 naira that that government or that council would pay as a palliative, as a discount, as a subsidy to the farmers so that they get their full market price. A subsidy is just an amount to take off the pain of full price from people. I think that's really the easiest way around that explanation. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Now, applying that for that to fuel subsidy, just help us break it down. What fuel subsidy is, and most importantly, how that came about in Nigeria.
Okay, so I'll go back to that analogy we just made. When we found out in the early 1970s, 71, 72, 73, that the price of oil, and I'll go back to that by saying this, if you want to cook a pot of soup, you must put together some ingredients to get a final outcome, which is soup. So it means that for you to make soup, you're going to have to refine something or break something down. And the starting point is pepper. So take it that the price of pepper goes up. If the price of pepper goes up, automatically, before you add your ingredients, it means that the cost of your soup will go up. So crude oil in its raw form is extracted. However, crude oil has a global international price. I always make this example that crude oil in its raw form cannot do anything for anybody. You can't put it into planes. You can't put it into your car. You can't use it to cook. So it means that all the activities around crude oil are just to bring it out from the ground. However, when those prices of that commodity begins to go up, it means that every other thing that you get from it, so we're all aware of what we call petrol, we're aware of what we call diesel, we're aware of what we call lubricants and gas, LPG, CNG, all those are what you call derivatives from crude oil. Because the price of crude oil has gone up, it means automatically the price of the end products, the refined products, are going to go up. This happened sometime in the early 1970s, like I said. So the federal government at that time said, look, the price of crude oil is going really high. The cost of this product to the end masses or the people of the country is also going higher. So let us introduce some form of, back to what we said, palliative, discount, subsidy, so that if they want to buy products from the market, from the retail stations, we bridge the gap for them by X amount. So that is how subsidy started in the early 70s. And because crude oil, like I said, it's a product that the prices go up and the prices go down. As they continue to go up, the amounts became higher. But let's not delve into that first. I mean, the basic introduction, like I said now, is just to say it started around the 1970s and 73. And the aim was to make sure that there was some form of comfort for people who were buying petroleum products. So that is how it started. And that is basically what the subsidy has been up till this point.
Thank you very much. Now, just a little digression so that somebody has a better understanding. Why is a country that produces so much crude oil having to pay for every other thing that is derived from crude oil?
Fantastic question. Remember when we talked about the pot of soup? We said that the first thing you'd have to do is put pepper in the pot before you add other ingredients.
Yes.
Well, let's assume, and we're going as bare-based as possible so that everybody understands. When you buy pepper in its raw form, you find out that people take it to someone to grind it. So let's go back to oil and subsidy and refining. Crude oil in its raw form, and I said this, doesn't add value to anything. It's just a commercial, commodity. But it needs to be refined. So that means that you have to break it down. You have to crack it. You have to refine it to be able to get PMS, AGO, diesel, and all those things. Now, your question is so apt because it meant that up until the 70s and the 80s, the refineries in Nigeria were working. Now, as they got older, and I like to use the word mismanaged, we found out that at a certain time, Nigeria had no refining capacity. Kaduna refinery wasn't working. Port Harcourt refinery wasn't working. The Warri refinery as well weren't working. Where any one of them was working, they were working at basically 30 to 40% capacity. So it meant that the country that had crude oil had to take that crude oil outside Nigeria to a grinder, quote unquote, which was in Europe, to grind that crude oil or refine that crude oil and then bring it back to Nigeria as refined petroleum products. So we took out the pepper, took it to Europe to be ground, and then brought back the soup because it's the soup that we could eat. So it's the petrol that we could use in our cars. It's the diesel that we could use in generators, and it's the gas, LPG, and all the rest that we could use to cook. So the answer to your question is simply the fact that we had absolutely no refining capacity from, let me say, the early 90s. Because, I mean, by that time, we were already in a precarious situation. By the time we go into the 2000s, I mean, we were basically down to almost zero refining capacity. So that's what I would say to answer that question.
Shim, just to add to what Jiri has said, I did my 6 months internship in Kaduna Refinery. I was there for 6 months. That refinery didn't produce a single drop of any product for that 6 months. And I doubt that since I left that place during my internship, if Kaduna Refinery has produced anything, you understand? And that's about 20 years ago. So that has been the state of the refining capacity of most of the Nigerian refineries.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. It's important I add this. Aziz has made a very, very insightful statement. But you see, the point is this. There are refineries in the world that are 80 or 90 years old. So go back to what we talked about when we say maintenance culture. Some of those refineries went moribund and dead because they were not maintained as and when due. Just to add some perspective, because I mean, the age, if you look at it, as I said, over 20 years ago, there are 50-year-old refineries, there are 80-year-old refineries. But because we didn't do the turnaround and maintenance as and when due, that is why they became moribund.
Wow. So it's one of the major issues definitely has to do with maintenance and, like you mentioned, mismanagement. And that's right. How we find ourselves in this situation. Now, going forward, now that we are in this quagmire, it begs the question, some of the things that happened then that gave the country the funds or the government the funds to be able to subsidize. So since when the subsidy was put into place, the palliatives, and now, what were some of those things that happened that now necessitated a situation where the government can no longer provide a subsidy?
Okay, so remember when we started this conversation, we talked the fact that crude oil prices, and back to cost of pepper, let's assume it goes up. It means that every time you bring back refined petroleum products from wherever it is, the cost is higher because crude oil price is higher. So the government now said, you know what? Let us keep managing this. Instead of putting commercial values to it, let us start what we call DSDP, direct sales, direct purchase, which was basically a swap. So it meant that as we kept on having higher crude oil prices, the subsidy differential kept on increasing. That's one facet. But this is not a problem if, as a country, your revenue base is increasing. However, our revenue started to decline. What were some of the reasons why revenue started declining? I'm a proponent of the fact that government spending is one thing that we haven't dealt with, and we must. But that's just one. The second thing was that this is a country that has brought out, or let me say, explored, or shall I say, removed from the ground. I'm trying to be as bare, as basic as I can. 2.5 million barrels of crude oil a day. We're not even near those marks now. Now we're hovering on 1.2, 1.3. There are some plans that will get to 1.6 and 1.8. So this is the point. When you see that the revenue base is dwindling, we're not producing as much crude oil. We're not increasing revenues. Foreign direct investments are dropping. It means that there's more squeeze on what the country is making. And it means that the only way they can survive, or we can survive, is to begin to cut excess, or shall I say, excess spending. So it got to a point where the government was like, look, we're almost broke. Well, not in those words. But it meant that at that point in time, they said, look, we can't continue to subsidize until we can tackle insecurity and make sure that we have higher crude oil prices. And sorry, higher crude oil supply. We can extract more crude oil. There's so much gas in the country that is flared. And you see, it's capturing all these assets and converting them into cash so that the revenue of the country continues to increase. So the bottom line is that subsidy and the conversations around it increased up until the 29th of May, when the new president said it was gone, because of the fact that revenue for the country kept on building. You remember there was a time called the oil boom. The oil boom era had so much oil and so much revenue. There were people who said at that time that, look, Nigeria doesn't have a problem. It's how to just spend money that was a problem. But you see, we didn't begin to build from there. And we've gotten to a head where now the government is struggling. Some states aren't paying salaries as and when due. Revenue distribution to states was obviously reduced. As the crude oil vandalism increased at that time, it meant that the oil theft alone was taking a massive dent out of what we were supposed to get as a country. So that is what brought about the conversations of removing it. And I'll go one step further. In removing it, the questions are now, and I guess when we get to Aziz, when Aziz comes in, what do we now do as a nation? Because once you remove it, the impact hits everybody. And there's a lot of analogy about the poor in the country. But you know, for me, it's everybody. Food prices go up for everybody. There is an argument that, yes, maybe some people in government or some people in government are funded by taxpayers' money. But that's how we got to where we got to in terms of removing the subsidy. I hope that answers your question, Jim.
Yes, very well. Thank you so much. Now, for the last question for you, in few words as possible, when the Dangote refinery was commissioned, some rejoiced, some saw it as a flicker of hope, some saw it as a beam of hope. Now, what should we be looking at with Dangote refinery starting operation? Will it actually drop the price of premium motor spirits as a PMS?
So my answer to that is yes. But you said in as few words as possible. So that's the fewest word, yes. However, just for some context, the Dangote refinery is situated in Ekpe. So today, every cargo that comes in doesn't come in from Nigeria. It comes in from either Belgium, Antwerp. Let's just say it comes in from Europe. So it means that a vessel has to go to Europe to bring the PMS and then discharge it into tanks in Lagos. So look at it that the cost of transportation of that cargo is much, much higher if you go to Europe than if you went to Ekpe. So plus or minus, there's about a 30% reduction that we'll see in freight cost, which will have an impact on the price. The second thing is this. Today, there's a 19 naira that is accounted for in every liter of fuel that we buy across the country, something called Petroleum Equalization Fund. So that amount, ideally, should come out of all the calculations for the Dangote refinery. So let's assume that we're buying right now, and we are buying right now about 480. Let us take 30% of that, and then maybe another 5% for refining efficiencies, because it's a new refinery and it's a big refinery, as long as it gets good. You'd find out that the differential in pump price should go down by that amount. The final thing I'll say is this. As long as crude oil, for any reason, goes lower, it also means that the cost from the Dangote refinery will be lower. The second, and or shall I say, the third and final thing is this, and just to cap it up, the supply chain issues between Europe and Nigeria are 14 to 21 days. That's the turnaround time for every vessel. It's going to drop automatically to about 3 to 5 days within the Dangote refinery in Ekpe. So product availability becomes something that, I mean, is much, much more abound. And then, like I said, freight cost will be an added advantage.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Well, there is indeed hope, and that is hoping that, you know, it starts operation as soon as possible. Moving over now to...
Sorry, Shio, I have one last question for Jide, because I've heard this question. Based on the cost, the sales price across different stations in the country, I know in Lagos it's 488, but in some states in the east, it's 5-something. In the north, it's like 530. Why do we have that price differential? Why is it not 500 across the country?
Now, back to what we said. Remember the last thing I talked about was PEF. PEF was what you call a Petroleum Equalization Fund. And that answered that question, because what he wanted to do was ensure that PMS was sold at the same price everywhere. However, in principle, Sokoto is landlocked. Kano is landlocked. So it means that if you took a vessel and discharged it in Lagos, the cost of transportation by road from Lagos, let's say Ibafo or Apapa, to Ikeja is much, much lower than if you had to take it to Kano, Sokoto or Yobe. Now, with a total deregulation and removal of subsidy, what that means is that everybody is going to pay the fair value price or the landed cost in each state. Now, it means that products are most likely going to be higher in the far northern areas than they are in the south. So answer your question finally. You talked about places like in the east. Now, it also means that the economies of scale and comparative advantage must begin to play. So look at it that Dangote Refinery is the source. And a vessel loads from Dangote Refinery. Don't forget that if it's going to discharge at Ibafo, we're talking about the vessel now, It's going to take a lower freight than if it's going to discharge in Port Harcourt. So the further away you are from Lagos, there is a price that you must pay for transportation. You remember what I said about comparator? So now the question for people is that why are you taking a vessel and not going straight into Port Harcourt? People are now going to have import licenses to continue. So if you do your numbers and you find out that it's cheaper to land in Port Harcourt than it is in Lagos. But the question is that, will it be? The refinery is in Lagos, so the shortest distance to Port Harcourt will still be Lagos compared to Antwerp or Belgium. So as is, the differential is the cost of transportation to those places. And in a deregulated society, those costs will be added. That is why they'll be much higher there.
Thank you very much. So indirectly, I say it would be cheaper to live in Lagos than other parts of the country.
Thank you all for the further explanation. So moving on, now that we are here, fuel subsidy has been removed. What is the way forward for employers and employees? How do they cushion the effect of this removal?
Okay. I would start with something that I watched recently and I found very interesting. In fact, it was Jide that flagged it on LinkedIn. It was an interview by Arise TV granted to Mustafa Chike Obi, and he said something that got me thinking. He said, there are three subsidies that are of of that are very impactful in this country. And we've only looked at one and we are shouting. Okay. And he talked about the FX subsidy, that in his view, it's even of greater impact. My point is, it's not going to end with the few subsidies. So let's begin to adjust ourselves very well, you know, just to put this in context. Now, just to highlight the fact that we are not just talking about FX subsidy because, you know, it was room. We are talking about it because of the impact it has on the average Nigerian. Currently, based on published statistics, transportation costs constitute about 30% of the disposable income of the average worker. So if you increase that transportation cost by any amount, it is huge on the income of the average worker. That's one. Two, transportation costs constitute about 25 to 30% of the cost of any goods or services in Nigeria. So even if you are not spending money in terms of moving yourself, the goods and services that you buy, the percentage of transport costs in that is also very high. So anytime there is an increase in transport costs, it has a huge impact on the average Nigerian. So the average Nigerian is right to be worried in terms of how will they manage because of the removal of fuel subsidy. So let's understand that part. However, I like seeing things differently. My preference is to see every disruption as an opportunity to do things differently. And that's how I think we should look at removal of fuel subsidy. So I will start with the employer. What should the employer look at in trying to help the employees ameliorate the removal of fuel subsidy? I'll look at it under two large buckets. The first one is you could provide transportation assistance. And there are different ways of doing this. Some companies already have staff bus. You could increase the number of staff bus that you have, or if you're not doing that currently, you can provide staff bus for your employees. Those companies that have a lot of money can choose to pay transport allowance if they're not already paid transport allowance, or they can increase the amount they pay for transport allowance. But for me, the third point is the one that I really like. There's a lot that has been said about carpooling, but mostly carpooling has been done from an individual perspective. And therefore, it means that the scope and reach is limited. But I think companies can take this over and put in place a system-wide carpooling structure, either through a website or an app. What that does is that it allows the whole carpooling process to be a lot more encompassing, and therefore more people will be willing to participate, and the effect is a lot more than if people on their own are trying to achieve carpooling. So that's the first bucket, talking about providing transport assistance. Now, the second bucket is offering flexible work arrangements. Now, there are several options that we can look. Today, the widely accepted work schedule is a 5-day work week. And I'd like to emphasize this. The 5-day work week was a creation of man. It can always be recreated. It wasn't as if when God created man, he created a 5-day work week. No. It was man that created a 5-day work week. It means that we can move from a 5-day work week to a 4-day or a 3-day work week. And with the removal of first subsidy, I think this is a good opportunity for us to do that. So companies can begin to consider 3-4 days work week rather than 5 days work week, so that your employees spend they spend less on transporting themselves to their places of work. That's one. Now, so in case you are in love with the 5-day work week and you say, no, we must do the 5-day work week, you can also consider reducing your working hours. So today we have an 8-hour work week. 9 hours, but there's 1 hour for lunch. So for most companies in Nigeria, they operate 8 to 5. You can consider shorter working days. Rather than the 8 hours, you can consider 6 or 7 hours. Now, let me tell you why this is important. Now, one of the major wastage of fuel is the fact that cars, especially in Lagos and in cities, spend a lot of hours in traffic. Now, when you reduce your work hours, what you do is that you can avoid those periods that are rush hours. In Lagos, it's typically from, you know, your 4 to like 7 or 4 to 8 p.m. That's the rush hour. So if you do a 6-hour and you close at 3, your employees can avoid that that time in traffic and they get home on time. So yes, they will come to work the same number of days, but they would avoid those times that they would have spent in traffic. So you can reduce your work days, your work hours from 8 hours to 7 or to 6. 3, you could also consider different time schedule. So for example, the most popular time schedule right now in Nigeria is 8 to 5. It means most people leave home at about, in Lagos, 6 or 5 and get to work between 7 and 8, close at 5 and get to work between 6 and maybe 8 p.m. Now, you can consider a working schedule of 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. What that means is that if you close at 4 p.m., you can also avoid a bit of the traffic. Again, traffic is where a lot of people waste their fuel because the car is not moving and the car is stationary. So if you consider an alternative work hour, you can also help your employees to reduce the amount of money they spend in buying fuel.
Now let's move over to the employees, and I'll quickly start off by saying this. So as an essential worker, I'm a broadcaster, and it means that every day of the week I have to be out. And I have noticed since the announcement of the fuel subsidy removal, just about 2 days after, the roads have been free. Now, the first 2 days or first 3 days, everywhere was terrible with the traffic.
I noticed that as well.
Since then, the traffic has been less and you have lesser cars on the road. And I think it just starts us off on some of the recommendations that employees should start to look at. For instance, I have someone who before now drives her own car, but now she has to join the staff bus. So what are some of the modifications the employees should be looking at in adjusting to this price increase as a result of the removal?
I think you just mentioned the first one, drive less. Drive less. If it's not necessary, do not go anywhere. I think as a country, we might become fitter because people will learn to walk again rather than enter cars. You know, take public transport if convenient instead of driving. Secondly, I think we should also consider fuel efficient cars. I think this is something that we've never considered because, like Jide said, we've been buying PMS at a cheaper rate than what the market had to sell PMS. So, for example, people hardly in Nigeria ever consider the engine configuration of their cars. So, for example, people drive cars with V8 engine and V6 engine. You know, now that we are buying fuel at a very high price, people would have to consider whether those sort of cars are necessary. And if you are buying a car now, I would advise you to go for a normal 4-cylinder car engine because it consumes less fuel rather than a V8 or a V6 engine. Yeah, Jide, you want to add?
Thank you. I just wanted, before you left that line of thought, when you talk about fuel efficient cars, I think that one thing that employers, yes, and banks need to do now is that there must be flexible finance options for car conversions. Why do I say so? If you worked out compressed natural gas or LPG, it will come to roughly about 220, if my memory serves me right, 220 naira per liter. So what is the greatest fear or the greatest cost around that? It is the cost of the conversion. So if employees are giving loans from employers for conversions, so let's say the conversion costs, let's say 350,000 naira, and you give them some kind of conversion loans where they can pay back over 1 year, banks also need to get, and I always say the banks always just play catch up. They know people will always come to them. Banks need to be knocking on organizations and companies and say, look, your staff salaries are with us. People who want to convert from petrol to CNG or to LPG, and I keep on saying LPG because the infrastructure is already available.
Yeah.
CNG, we need to do some more work in terms of, but by now, government needs to sit down and say, look, your staff bosses, we will give your company a loan, 12-month moratorium, and single digit, so that the staff bosses can move from petrol to gas. These are conversations that need to start happening now. In India, the Keke Marwas, Keke Marwas and their bikes, they've been on electricity and LPG for as long as I can remember. In Ghana, I worked in Ghana for 3 years. In 2008, it was a massive culture shock for me for a cab to drive into a gas station to fill his car with LPG. Almost all the taxis were on LPG. So I think those are conversations that need to start happening now. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. Spot on, GD, because I did some calculations, some days ago just to get my hand on this whole LPG thing. And based on current prices as of today, I hear LPG prices have gone down. Based on today's prices, it is cheaper to run your car on LPG than PMS, excluding the capital cost you have to do for conversion as of today's prices. And there's a possibility that the LPG prices might come down. So it actually means that it might be cheaper for a lot more Nigerians to run their cars on LPG than on PMS.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention in cars is, again, people do not take notice. It's also your engine size. So for example, some cars, same car, they come in different engine size. So for example, you can have the same car, a 2.7-liter engine and a 2-liter engine. The 2.7-liter engine generates more power but consumes more fuel than a 2-liter engine.
Absolutely.
You have to ask yourself, the power that you are looking for, where are you taking it to? A 2-liter engine saves you well in Lagos. So if you want to minimize your cost, you better go for a 2-liter engine than a 2.7-liter engine. Okay?
Absolutely.
Then something, again, we've also not been careful about is where we buy our gasoline. I would advise for people to shop around and ensure that you get the best deal. Getting the best deal is not just the price, but you also have to find out the stations that guarantee you pump integrity. This is what I mean by pump integrity. There is what is called a tolerance limit. GD knows that. So for every liter of fuel you buy, you get a certain liter of fuel based on what is approved by the government.
Yeah.
Now, however, some filling stations have gone to adjust their pumps further, such that you are getting less than what the government has approved, meaning that you are buying less than you could have gotten somewhere else.
Correct.
If you buy fuel from such a place, you'll be spending a lot more money. One way of knowing stations that have good pump integrity is very simple. Look for stations where Keke Marwas and bus drivers buy their fuel. They know because they buy fuel in little quantity.
It's an incisive point you make. But you see, this is what I always say about our country needs to live on regulations, and we must stop being reactive but being proactive. I had a conversation 2 weeks ago, and NMDPRA was in that, and FCCPC was in that. And I said, with the fuel subsidy removal, it means that agencies of government that are regulators must up the ante. It's an interesting point you raised, because the question is this. The fuel checks, the measuring can scenario days of the past must begin to happen again. NMDPR must start going around stations and randomly checking their pumps. Because you see, you can't move prices to 488 and then fleece people by increasing tolerance. It's just not going to work. FCCPC still has to up the game in terms of price gouging. If we say that, funny enough, let's just say that there's a band and we think that prices should be around 488, 490, why are people selling at 530? You get, if those bodies that are meant to regulate do not regulate, then what it is that we just allow chaos to thrive and then only a few people gain. Just to add to that.
Yeah, so true. Thank you, Jay. I mean, last thing that I want to talk about was putting more attention on car maintenance. Because it does affect the fuel our cars consume. I'll just cite two examples. One, your tire pressure is important. You have to ensure your tire pressure is right, because if you do not, So for if your tire pressure is lower than normal, it means that your car has to generate more power to move the car and therefore use more fuel. The second one I want to mention is your air fuel ratio. There's a ratio bit of the fuel and air that goes into the cylinder for the whole thing for the car to move. If that ratio is not right, you will be consuming more fuel than is required, and therefore it means you are wasting money. So this is a time for everybody to ensure that your cars are well maintained, so that you are not wasting fuel in any way. So Sheryl, those are some of the tips that I think we can begin to implement, and maybe it might help us manage the process better.
Thank you so much. If there is something I should extract from your last point, it is that don't just drive a car, know about it.
Yeah.
Because you realize that many people just drive cars. They just see a car, they like it, the build, the size, whatever, and they just drive it. But we have entered into the era where you need to have more information about the car you're buying, the engine, what it runs on, how much you know it takes to maintain it, and a lot of things. So please don't just buy a car or drive a car. Know much more about it. And I think another of the thing I have been able to extract from what you said, which was further contributed to by GDA, is that all hands have to be on deck really, especially when it concerns the regulation bodies. Everybody needs to do their job, from that of the pump integrity. So also you, as someone who owns a car and drives a car, make sure that you are on the look and you are not being ripped off by people who are fraudulent with these sales. So pay attention to where you buy your fuel. And you know, the easy marker is for you to look at where the transport vehicles, the public transport vehicles are going to, and just do your own research too. Now, on the part of the employer, it's important that they should provide assistance. I think a number of state governments are starting to look at that. There was that of Kwara State that decided to reduce their working days from 5 to 3 days. And I think Oyo State also is following suit. And some other states. You said?
Edo State as well.
Yes, I saw that released by Governor Obaseki. So yes, it's important, and I think employers should be really nice. You know, don't just be so much in love with the faces of your employees that you want them to come in every day. If the work can be done remotely, if there is a need for a hybrid work, you could just do it. Those meetings, cut down on the unnecessary meetings. If you can do them via Zoom, please do it. And reduce the number of work hours as well as the working days. So that is important. And for the employee and for people generally, I think one of the things mentioned by Aziz is that the impact of this removal is, there is a ripple effect. So it's not just about the fuel subsidy. We've got the Forex as well. So this thing will spill over to a number of things. So if you can cut down on a number of things while we adjust, and then hopefully things get better. So would you like to share your key learnings, takeaways for today, or anything you just like to distill into a few points, Jide?
Okay, maybe just a parting shot. Is this going to be uncomfortable, removal of fuel subsidy? Yes. I think this conversation, we've talked about ways people can deal with it. But I think for me, this parting shot will be to the government. Trust deficit is at an all-time high. And they need to now begin to do things that give some confidence to the populace that this governance is not just robbing them. So the palliatives we talked about, the government has to now stretch out and say, look, if it is food stamps, there just has to be some accountability. You can tell us you're going to collect 800 million and you're distributing it to, I don't know if it's 100,000 or, I mean, things like that for me are just ways of stealing money. So, organize food stamps every month or every 2 months. Let us say that, look, this is how much has been saved on subsidy. This is where it's going. And give it to someone like the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Agency. Let them be the one to run it. Get PwC, you know, KPMG, some people that have some level of credibility so that trust deficit is built back. I think that would be my parting shot.
Thank you very much. What will be yours, Aziz?
Yeah, I think some of the things that Judy highlighted, I think is very important. You know, people are always willing to make changes when they believe that other people are also willing to change. You know, so I think if the government also shows that they are also willing to change, you know, I think the people would also follow suit. But secondly, from an individual perspective, is, and I mentioned this earlier, yes, this is a tough time, but let's use these times to see how we can do things differently. It matters a lot. Think differently, do things differently. I think some years from now, we'll look back and say, wow, we become better people. We become, maybe somebody in Nigeria invented a car because of this that happened. You understand? So I think let's use this period to just think differently and behave differently.
Thank you very much. You know, I was having a conversation with someone yesterday and I said, maybe this will propel us to have solar cars, you know, solar powered cars, who knows? And then we can just have it here in Nigeria and maybe affordable at some point. Thank you all so much. You want to say something, Judy?
That's a good way to go. That's a good way to go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and your presence today. Thank you for sharing with us, GD. And of course, thank you for those insightful tips, Aziz. It's been a very great, enlightening conversation so far. And we thank you for listening. For this episode, the editing and the production was done by Joshua Praise. Then the original music that you're listening to as a soundbed is by Jasto Christos, while the poster design is by Faith Folari and Joseph Okafor. Thank you again, and of course, come back for more episodes of the Kolavari Work Series. Bye.
Bye.